Jennings again, the niggling doubt. It was on the headmaster's orders that Jennings and Derbyshire spent Saturday afternoon filling dustbin bags with rubbish. When their bags were full, they made their way to Oak Tree Cottage, where they found Miss Thorpe in the barn, feeding her tropical fish. Miss Thorpe switched on the main light, and the boys moved closer to inspect the tank. It was a well-stocked aquarium, and Miss Thorpe was keen to point out its features and identify the various breeds of fish. "Everything depends on the thermostat, so we can keep the water at the same temperature these little fellows would enjoy in a tropical river." "How warm does that have to be?" Derbyshire wanted to know.
"Mid-70s. I set the thermostat at 75, and they seem to like it."
75 degrees centigrade?" Jennings queried. "What?" Miss Thorpe's squawk of horror was the croak of a corncrake in distress.
"Centigrade? Good gracious, no! What an idea! Fahrenheit, of course. I want live fish, not boiled ones."
Miss Thorpe was seldom away from home, so the daily feeding of the fish was usually no problem. But the following Saturday, she told them, she had arranged to visit her sister in Kent, where she would be staying the night.
"I shall have to find someone to feed the fish, and keep an eye on the cottage, too," she said,
though she knew from previous occasions that a word to Mr. Carter would set her mind at rest on that score. Jennings was struck by a bright idea. "We'll feed the fish for you next Saturday," he offered. It seemed the obvious solution, so she readily agreed and showed them the correct amount of fish food to sprinkle into the tank. Then, after watching the fish for a few minutes, Derbyshire said,
"We'll have to be going now. The head said we'd got to be back before dark."
Miss Thorpe followed them out of the barn and switched off the main light, leaving the fluorescent tube burning over the aquarium. On the following Saturday, the two boys made their way to the barn to carry out their fish-feeding duties. The light tube was glowing over the aquarium, but the daylight was dim around the walls of the outbuilding with its one small window. Jennings flicked on the main light. "That's better. Now we can see what we're doing." Everything was in order in the aquarium. The thermometer stood at precisely 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Jennings sprinkled a generous measure of fish food onto the water, and the boys watched as the fish swam up and snatched at the floating grains. The boys were so fascinated that for a while they lost count of time and stood watching for longer than they had intended. Suddenly, Jennings looked at his watch and cried, "Wow! Fossilized fish hooks! It's nearly 5:40! Quick, Derby, quick!" Jennings darted across to the door, flicking off the light switch as he passed by. The tea bell was ringing as Jennings and Derbyshire arrived back at school. Halfway through the meal, a worrying, niggling doubt crept into Jennings' mind. And as soon as tea was over, he sought out Derbyshire, whom he found swapping library books with Bromage and Atkinson in the common room. "Listen, Derby, this is serious," he began. "Can you remember me switching the light off in the barn when we came out?"
"Yes, I think so."
"Ah, but which one did I turn off, the main light or the aquarium?"
"No idea. Doesn't matter, does it?"
"Of course it matters." Jennings' voice was shrill with anxiety. "The two plugs are side by side in the same socket. If I switched off the wrong one, I've turned off the immersion heater in the fish tank." Derbyshire's eyes opened wide and his jaw dropped.
"Wow! Oh, my goodness! Fossilized fish hooks! That means the water's been getting colder ever since we left."
He uttered a little moan of despair.
"Oh, and it'll go on getting colder and colder all through tonight and all tomorrow."
All right, you don't have to tell me." Bromage and Atkinson, guessing that something sensational was in the wind, put down their library books and came closer, demanding details.
"It's Miss Thorpe's tropical fish," Derbyshire explained. "We're looking after them while she's away, and now Jennings says he's turned the heating off and they'll die if the water goes cold."
He gulped and swallowed hard.
"For all we know, they're dead already. frozen stiff. Why didn't you look to see which one he had turned off? Temple demanded when abreast of the facts. I didn't have time. We were late and I brushed out in a hurry, and it all depends how long you can stay alive after the water's gone cold, said Rumbelow. Does anybody know?
Nobody did.
It's not only the fish, it's Miss Thorpe, wailed Derbyshire. She trusted us. What's she going to say when she comes back and finds all those dead bodies floating about?
You'll have to pay for them, said Venables. Bet they cost ever so much. Hundreds of pounds, I shouldn't wonder. Jennings hardly heard him. He was standing, tense with worry, racking his brain, trying to recall his hurried exit from the barn. He remembered shooting out his arm towards the socket as he ran past, but after that, nothing. After a few moments, he said, I'll have to go down to the cottage. I might be in time to save them if I go right away.
How can you go? Old Wilkie will never let you go out after dark.
I shan't ask old Wilkie. I shall ask Mr. Carter. He's more likely to say yes. Jennings hurried from the room in search of Mr. Carter, while the rest of the group drifted away to resume their interrupted activities. Blotwell, the youngest boy in the school, went off to the tuck-box room to look for his friend Binns, who had not been present in the common room while the mind-boggling topic was being discussed. Briefly, he outlined what had happened.
What do the fish need the light left on all night for?
Binns wanted to know.
Surely they can find their way round the tank in the dark. It's not the light, it's the heat.
Blotwell explained.
Jennings cut the electricity off before tea, and he reckons they'll be on their last legs by now.
Fish haven't got any legs, Binns objected.
Well, flapping their fins to keep warm, or whatever fish do. You don't seem to realize how serious it is.
Blotwell searched his mind for some telling example to bring home the full horror of the situation.
Look, it's like this. Supposing you were lying down in a nice warm bath, and the water began to get cold, what would you do?
I'd turn the hot tap on.
Yes, yes, but supposing you couldn't be bothered to sit up, so you tried to turn it on with your big toe, and somehow, quite by chance, your toe got stuck in the tap, so you couldn't get it out. You'd be trapped.
I'd shout for help, Binns decided.
Nobody would hear you. You were alone in the house. They'd all gone off to the cinema.
How do you know where they've gone?
I just said supposing. You'd be stuck there hour after hour, all night perhaps, till they got back.
Must have been a long film then.
Yes, it was. Ever so long. And they missed the last bus and had to walk. And it was a bitterly cold night, snowing hard, and the bathwater started to freeze. And by the time they got home, what's all this got to do with Miss Thorpe's fish?
Binns demanded impatiently.
Ah, I was coming to that. Do you remember old Wilkie telling us in class about a band of explorers in Siberia? They were digging for fossils and stuff, and they came across a huge mammoth, thousands of years old, frozen solid in a vast block of ice.
Binns nodded. He remembered the lesson well.
Well, when they got back afterwards...
Who? The Siberian explorers?
No, you clodpole! The people who'd been to the cinema. When they got back to the house...
Blotwell winced, shuddered, and drew in his breath sharply.
When they got back, a gruesome spectacle met their eyes. Master N. Binns, Esquire, trapped by his big toe, frozen solid in a bath of ice like a prehistoric mammoth.
Binns tapped his forehead.
You're mad! What's my bathwater got to do with fossilized mammoths? Don't you see?
Young Binns could be pretty slow in the uptake at times, Blotwell thought.
I was just trying to explain why Miss Thorpe's fish, shivering in the tank, would be like you, stuck in a cold bath.
Binns thought for a moment, then shook his head. Not the same thing at all, he argued. For one thing, fish haven't got any toes, so how could they get them stuck in the tap? Honestly, Blotters, you do talk an awful lot of piff. There was no reply when Jennings knocked on Mr. Carter's study door. Nuttall, coming up the stairs, said, If you're looking for Mr. Carter, you'll be unlucky. He's just gone to the village in his car. This was a setback, for now Jennings realized he would have to approach Mr. Wilkins, who was certain to say no. Of course you can't go out again, Mr. Wilkins said when he heard the request. You know perfectly well that no boy is allowed out alone after dark. It's a school rule. But, sir, quiet, boy, bellowed Mr. Wilkins. You heard what I said. He pointed to the door. Out, boy, out. Outside in the corridor, Jennings almost wept with frustration and made up his mind. It was dark on the road to the village, and a chill November wind was blowing. He should have brought a torch, Jennings scolded himself. He ran the last 100 yards and let himself in at the garden gate. A car was parked nearby, but he paid no attention to it, for now he could see a light inside the barn and hurried towards it. He retrieved the key from under the loose brick and opened the door. He gasped with relief. The strip light over the aquarium was burning. The thermometer still registered 75 degrees, and the fish were swimming contentedly in the tepid water. So he hadn't turned off the wrong switch. He needn't have bothered to come. He went out down the garden path which led past the cottage to the gate. He had gone only a few yards when a light flashed on in an upstairs room in the cottage. A few seconds later, it was switched off, and this was followed by a light appearing downstairs, which, in turn, was extinguished almost immediately. But not before the shadow of a man was silhouetted on the closed curtains of the living room window. Jennings stood stock still, his heart pounding and his hands trembling. There was only one explanation. A burglar. Jennings hardly dared to breathe. What should he do? Make a dash for the gate and get onto the road before the man came out? The intruder, having crossed the kitchen, was letting himself out through the back door by torchlight, a few yards from where the boy was standing. Jennings shrank back into the shrubbery, trying to evade the man's torch beam as it swept round the garden. In his haste, he tripped over an exposed tree root and fell with a noise that set the undergrowth around him swishing and creaking. A man's voice rang out. Who's that? Come out from there. The torch beam swept over the swaying bushes and focused on the figure crouching on the ground beneath. So it's you, Jennings, said the voice. The voice was the voice of Mr. Carter. Jennings Again was written and adapted by Anthony Buckeridge, read by Stephen Fry, and produced by Anne Hines.